Welcome to the QuokkaCast, featuring special people just like you as they share inspirational insights to help amp up the joy in your journey. Our episodes are meant to be a relaxing stop, a waypoint to recharge yourself and explore new ways of connecting and working with others. Each person's story reveals new perspective as we experience their values, the changing landscape of their journeys, and the meaningful metaphors guiding them to seek wisdom and joy, even in difficult circumstances. It's people like these who support and guide us. They are the change agents making a powerful difference in our workplaces and in our lives. So let's join our host, the Agile Quokka, as we meet another amazing person in this episode, and let's quok about it.
Hey there, QuokkaCast listeners. It's me, Jeff Davis, and I'm really excited for our guest today. His name is Andy Grossman. Andy is a colleague of mine where I'm currently working. We've known each other the past couple of years. Andy, welcome to the QuokkaCast, and take a few moments to tell everybody out there a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. I'm a senior Agile coach, and the fun part about it is I didn't start as a programmer. I actually started when I grew up. You know how everybody's like, you know, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a doctor. It's like, no, I grew up around sales. My dad was in sales for about 30 years. There's either five steps to a sale. There's always different closes you can do. So I said, you know, hey, I'm going to go into sales.
I can totally relate. My dad was in sales as well. All the Zig Ziglar kind of motivational tapes and those kind of things, right? Is that what you're talking about?
I think I have them on 8-track. So it started early. And then I said, you know, hey, I'm going to sell stuff. So I did. I tried. I tried selling cars. That was really interesting for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Mortgages when, you know, BC paper, you know, the people who have some credit issues, trying to sell that. So what I realized is I'm probably not going to be in sales, but it's an excellent way to start a career because you get a lot of different skills in terms of talking to people because you have to if you're going to make anything. So I went to, I said, well, you know what? Marketing kind of, you know, sales is cousin. So I went into marketing, and this was about the beginning of the internet. So I'm going to date myself out just a little bit, but we tried to sell websites and website advertising to people who had no idea about this internet. They think it might be a passing fad, or they think it's like, you know, a brochure. Kind of work through that. And when I actually did get somebody to create a website, that's where really the project management hat started and started going on a dark path to waterfall. Ended up getting,
I love it.
Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean that. What I meant is the dark path to waterfall. So I think, and it was great because, you know, I actually grew up and I was pretty much the organization person. You know, when I was in college, I would organize the charity. We had a huge event for the American Cancer Society that took like the entire year to plan. And it had, you know, a whole bunch of media, you know, all different kinds of work streams. I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew that I was really good at organizing things and talking to people and getting things done and kind of managing budgets.
Yeah.
That actually grew into a career because when you graduate in communications, there's not a defined career path for you. So I was in communications and psychology, and I was like, well, where can I use this? Well, you know, I started learning about Agile. There was one company I was working with, and one of the things they would say, and it's really funny, is like, we want to be the iTunes of fill in the blank. Well, this was the iTunes of unemployment claim. So one of the projects was
iTunes of unemployment claims. Okay.
They wanted to be slick and they wanted to have a great interface. And, you know, one of the ways that's where I really got introduced to Agile, but we didn't have any really good tools unless you count like TFS or anything like that. And it sort of grew into an obsession because I figured, well, wait a minute, if you give me a certain, you know, certain team and a certain amount of money and the requirements are, we're going to get you the highest priorities. I won't have to fill out change requests, you know, sign me up. And it's really gone on from there and had a lot of really interesting adventures at the beginning of Apple Pay, working mostly in the financial industry. So I've seen a few things. I've seen the beginning of healthcare.gov, you know, that website was a thing, and we were the employment verification that was on the end of it. Okay. And like I mentioned, the beginning of Apple Pay. So if you've ever swiped anything or, you know, double tapped on something, you know, you're welcome.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. That's really cool. You've really touched a wide array of not only technologies, but just different sorts of ways of working and ways of approaching relationships in the workplace, that all the way from sales and marketing, and you mentioned psychology and other things. So that's cool. That's a really nice, diverse kind of foundation to be operating from now that you're in the space of being an agile coach and influencing people and teams. I'm curious, we dove right into some of the career stuff though. Take a moment though, do you have some outside interests, some hobbies, some other things that you like to do that people might also like hearing about that kind of helps you as part of your journey in life?
Yeah, I really like to hike. So we have some pretty good hiking, and I've tried to get to all the national parks. I realize that's not going to happen. Here in the States, where I live in St. Louis, and the Arch just became a national park, so I'm counting that one. Woo-hoo. We're probably up to about 13, and okay. I have two girls who are now teenagers, and we've taken them. I consider them well-traveled, if you consider well-traveled within the bounds of the United States.
Okay, sure.
So we've taken them to a lot of really just amazing places, you know, life-changing. One of the times we went to Vegas, and I said, wake up, we're going to see the Grand Canyon. Oh, I don't want to get up for Grand Canyon. It's 2 hours away. And I'm like, you're going to see the Grand Canyon, so you don't have to write a tell-all book about how you never took, you know, to the most visited attraction in the world. Right. So we're going, you could sleep. And those are the things that we do. We're kind of scenery junkies where, you know, a lot of people will go to Disney and I need my Disney fix. I do like to travel.
Yep.
But I only need it like every couple of years, and I have to work through, you know, the after effects of it.
I love that you mentioned the state parks mm-hmm. and scenery and things, you know, because kind of the premise of what I'm doing with the podcast here, like I mentioned to you before we started recording, was, you know, thinking about our life, our career path, but also just in our lives, even outside of work, it's just a big journey, right? That we're all on. And there's so many amazing things on our journeys to stop and pause and reflect and think about. So the fact that you've encouraged your daughters there and taken them to a place to let them see the Grand Canyon or these other beautiful places and give them that gift, that's part of their story now, like you were just saying, and that's so special. So I love to take that kind of concept and sort of in a meta way, tie it in though, back into the workplace. So kind of coming back in to these things that you were sharing earlier, let's dive in a little bit and explore what are some ways that you have had people do that for you, like help you pause for a moment and kind of see the scenery at work and to discover or be awakened to something maybe that you didn't quite see through the same lenses. Do you have a story of somebody that kind of did that for you or like when that happened for you?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate in having some amazing agilists on my journey. Everything, I mean, you can read as many books as you want, but if you go to somebody and you say, hey, I want to figure out how you did this, or I need you to help me. Before I got into Agile, I kind of had to figure out about it. There's a whole great community in St. Louis that has different events. There's, of course, books and mentors, but I think, you know, a lot of people, when we had our Agile transformation office, they were amazing. I used to say, well, those Agile people, because I was in Waterfall and I had Waterfall on the brain, they're kind of weird. And I still stand by that, but it's kind of in a really good way because they're always like, well, wait a minute, why won't you give me what you're going to do 6 months from now? Well, because we don't really know. You know, obviously with everything that's happened, we don't really know what we're going to do, but there's been several people who've helped me on my journey, both informal coaches and formal coaching, which I highly suggest people, if you can get a formal coach, especially if you're an agile coach, that is amazing because they'll take it and they'll reframe it and they might throw your words back at you. Like when I tried to do health coaching and they said, well, you know, just pick somebody, pick one thing that you're going to do. And I'm like, don't you do retrospectives on me. I know that one. Just like if a salesperson comes to you and says like, hey, do you want this? You want to just take this home? Do you want me to deliver it Tuesday or Wednesday? And I'm like, I know that one. So you kind of get into your own head and then somebody can show you is like, well, wait a minute. You're framing this as, you know, this person's problem or, is it a problem or is it an opportunity? And I've just been really fortunate. Even people have left the company. We're pretty close community. I feel like I can call on them for any sort of advice. So it's been a number of different people, and it's people that you just wouldn't expect, or people maybe you didn't, you know, completely get along with first. And then I've started to get really curious. It's like, hey, you know, I'm curious, why do you think that way? Or why are we asking that way? I had one story, if you real quickly, where somebody was just, let's say, pretty aggressive with me on Instant Messenger, different things like that. They did not want the Agile. If I was selling something, you know, door to door, they'd be slamming the door in my face and putting a lock on the door and a safe in front of it and any other Warner Brothers, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoon thing you could think of. And I just stopped selling them. And I said, you know, just let me understand why you don't, you know, want Agile, or let me understand, you know, what happened. And it turns out that they had a pretty prescriptive Agile coach. It was something where, yeah, we're going to do Agile, but it's going to be my way. And these are in stone tablets, so don't even try to, you know, change what it is. And we really got to that. And I said, you know, if you want me to go away, that's fine. I have several other teams. I just want to make sure that we've given you the thing. So rather than pushing the Agile, I call it backing the Agile truck up. You know, you say, like, if you can hear the beep, beep, like of a trash truck, it's like, we're backing the Agile truck up. You know, make sure, you know, just kind of put this on your front lawn and do everything Agile and you will be happy. Whereas now I kind of wait for my opening for the teams. Because every team is different. Nobody's doing it by the book, and that's okay. Yeah. And that's another thing I started to learn and learn from my coaches and mentors. It's like, hey, you know what? They're not doing this exactly how you do it, but are they delivering? Are the teams happy? Are there different things you can look at versus you're not doing it in chapter and verse? And I find a lot of that sometimes in the Agile community.
Wow, you really touched on so many powerful things there. Yeah, the ability for somebody to give you a new set of lenses, and oftentimes it's like what I heard you describe is you realize that you yourself had to take a different approach, a different position, and to find yourself in something of more of a neutral stance is kind of my interpretation of what I heard you describing there. And it's really just like you did, starting a conversation from a sincere sort of curiosity or interest of, you know, tell me about what you're currently doing and how is that going? Is there anything you can imagine that you'd like to change? And that's how you kind of dance around and look for maybe that opening or that area of opportunity. So I think
in sales, we used to call it finding the pain.
There it is. Yeah. I was just about to say, I think there's probably a connection to the sales world, and you anticipated it. So finding the pain, is that what you said?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Cause I could come in and it's like, you know, hey, buy this couch. I don't want a couch. Well, tell me about your current couch. You know, maybe it's got a spring here loose, or maybe it's not coming together. That's what people respond to. And it's more emotional. It's like, you know, it doesn't have to be a couch. It's like, tell me about your current process.
Yeah.
I find that there are more salespeople who turn to Agile coaching. And I find there's more people who are kind of in the performance-based thing. And it's really interesting. It's like, well, yeah, I did a bit part on Modern Family, and now I'm an Agile coach. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought my journey, I think we're missing a few steps here.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that. I did a bit part. That's kind of like that.
Yeah.
I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express. So now I've got the skills.
Yada yada over the transformation. So I'm just interested in people's journeys. I think it's fascinating, you know, because you can't go to, I work with some of the folks, we call it Launch Code, but they're like new IT folks. So they could have been, you could have been a waitress 6 months ago. And if you go to this boot camp, you could be in IT. What they don't always do, they started to teach project management, but then they come in with more waterfall ideas. So I've tried to partner with some of those folks. I'm like, hey, can I come in? You know, can I go to your career day? So I've tried to expand. So, you know, I feel like I understand Agile enough to go out and talk about it to at least people who aren't in the industry.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite questions in an interview is like, you know, explain to me Agile. but don't use any agile terms.
There you go.
And it's really interesting to see what people get. You know, I'm a second grader. Explain it to me. Or
right.
I'm my great grandma. You know, explain it to me. I still haven't been successful explaining it to my family. So I'm writing that down. That's a great idea. I'm going to use that next time. So I love metaphors.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
They're so powerful, aren't they? It's funny because, and even for listeners who might be listening to the show and coming in from maybe a different perspective, you've said waterfall a few times, right? And people are probably that aren't as familiar might be going, what do they mean? Because waterfalls are beautiful, and they are, right?
They are.
And so Winston Royce, you know, so many years ago, back in the 1970s or so,
yeah.
Coming out of a engineering NASA type community, he writes this paper where he first has this model of how a process in creating software might work. And he shows it as kind of like a panacea, kind of a utopian way of this sequence of things. And visually, it has this image of like stair steps stepping down. And you can imagine water flowing down it like a nice, pretty cascading waterfall. The thing that so many people don't understand or that was missed for many decades was that he set it up as a straw man for an argument where he went on to say, things don't work that way in reality. The world is complex and challenging.
Absolutely.
And so he goes on to develop his paper where that diagram becomes way complex. I'm sure you've seen it, but he adds in kind of all the other things that need to be happening or that end up happening either in shadow ways or, or maybe more visible ways. And so it really becomes more akin to what those of us that are in the world of finding agility now are trying to help people create these short cycles of iterative things with feedback loops and ways to build quality in much sooner into their work rather than waiting for months and months and months to do quality assurance or testing or something when it's probably way too late at that point because there's way too many defects in what was created or built. But getting back to the metaphor part, you know, waterfalls, right? They're beautiful. It's like, yes.
They are. We see a lot of them in the national parks.
Yeah, right. And so it's such an amazing metaphor because that's what we want. We want this beautiful thing. We want work just to flow and be easy. And so, you know, in a way, I appreciate that. I try to bring that into what I do now when I'm helping people and teams is to think, you know, how do we make things flow? Maybe not like a waterfall exactly, but what's happening with your work right now where something's blocking the flow? You know, if your work were to be visualized as like, you know, water flowing through a hose or a pipe or something, does it flow easily? Does it get blocked? Are the pipes, you know, all corroded with gross buildup inside, right? I mean, you can just really go with metaphors. And so you just kind of got me going there thinking about that. And it's a helpful way to come alongside people and to say, like you said earlier, right? Tell me where your pain is. And then you can explore that with, well, if you could describe it with a metaphor, what would it look like? And that really becomes useful to teams to relate to each other of what they're feeling and what they'd like to improve upon. So I'm curious, like, what's that like for you currently where you're coming alongside people? Have you had any recent fun metaphor stories or ways that you've directed people maybe to books or other concepts that they've turned around and said, Andy, that was so helpful. Thank you for that.
Yeah, there actually is a formal mentee program at work. And there's also I don't even know what you would call it, but it's called Clean Language. And it's not that you just don't swear.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about what that is. Yeah.
So it's something that I'm really interested in and I do a lot at work with and I think I have a training session, but they're usually like in UK time. So you're almost, you know, at 3 a.m. on January something, I'll be in that session. But basically you're taking a conversation and where you might say, you need to do this or you need to do that. And a lot of the command control things that come with waterfall. TLC was right, don't go chasing waterfalls. But also you say, I should be able to have a conversation with you and you don't really know where I stand on whatever. It's not about my stuff. And I try to use this a lot in my coaching. So if you say like, hey, you know, a refinement meeting, you know, we all have refinement meetings. What are they like for you? Or what was last week's sprint like? If it was, I used to say if it was an ice cream cone, you know, what was it like, but even that, I feel like it was more directive. So we've used some of this stuff as a retrospective. We've used it in our team, and it's really amazing because there's some people, myself, I want to be the most organized person in the room, but I don't think I am. And you know, if I say, you know, it's like riding down a river in something, and then somebody else says, it's like taking ping pong balls and putting them in the right order and the right sequence, and then removing the ping pong balls, where you kind of have an idea of where they stand without them really telling you, hey, you know, if you want to talk to me, you know, give me 1, 2, and 3 in instructions. Don't give me these great generalizations, like make something awesome. You know, give them a little bit more than just a blank piece of paper. And it's really interesting. There's a couple of different books. There's one, I think it's from Contempt to Curiosity, which kind of is the origin story. So if you love Marvel movies or something, that is by Caitlin Walker, Dr. Caitlin Walker now.
Right.
And it's an amazing version of how she took high school kids who were, let's just say, troubled, and how she used this technology or this psychology or how that is to really help them make some breakthroughs. So that's what really motivates me, is to help people.
She's got a YouTube video where she talks about that.
Absolutely.
I'll include that in the show notes. She talks about how she was inspired from, was it David Grove? I think.
Yes, David Grove invented it.
Yeah, sorry, I may have interrupted you there. What else did you want to say about it?
It just helps people. Like, I have this waterfall PM that lives on my shoulder and says, you need to tell them what to do. You know what to do. You're the project manager. You have your PMP. Do that. They need to listen to you. And then I have to flick them off my shoulder and say, okay, now let's figure out what you want. It's not really about what I want. And it's like, you know, if I take a long vacation, can you still have things move along? I saw a really good metaphor of like an ice skating rink. Yeah, there's a couple of signs, you know, that says, don't kick other people with your skates. But like without, they did this fun video where they said, okay, now you go left, now you go right, now you're going too fast, now you slow down, and they're kind of in the middle of the ice skating rink. And it just was so ridiculous. But that's kind of how we live our lives and live our work lives sometimes. It's like, you know, these are smart people. Like I've worked with system architects and programmers that have forgotten more stuff than I'll ever know. So why am I going to tell them exactly how to do their work and then sit over their shoulder and completely micromanage them? So it's a struggle. It's a daily struggle. Those are really what I try to do, is like if I go into a team or if I go into a product, I'll listen first. I don't want to, but I will.
You don't want to, but you will.
Yeah.
And is it the not wanting to, just to clarify, is that because that, that little PM guy sitting on your shoulder, he's the one, that voice in your head that's wanted to talk and guide?
Yeah. He's like, oh, I've seen this situation 10,000 times. Let's just do this.
Yeah.
But if you do that, then how much buy-in do you have? Mm. You know, I had this thing where my wife said, you know, you can post this on Facebook, but you can only use these pictures and don't mention this and don't mention that. I'm like, okay, so those are a lot of requirements. I'm not super bought in on this. And I find that with my teams is that if I don't sit back and somehow they come to their own realization, we have some sort of collaborative discussion, it doesn't matter if I have the best idea in the world, it may not work for them.
Right,
or
right.
When you look at something and you can clearly see there's an issue, you don't know what the issue is. You just know maybe what questions to ask. And that's something, you know, I've been learning and, you know, kind of focusing on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, I'm right there with you on my journey. And my enthusiasm is to see other leaders who could benefit from that same perspective. And that's to become more, adopt more of this listening posture. On a previous, or my first episode here of the podcast, my guest and I were talking about just coming in with this, how can I help? And really just letting the team, letting the people open up to you. And like you said, with the clean language kind of concepts, you have other ways of asking that, how can I help? But you can ask these other things about, well, you know, whereabouts are you experiencing, you know, problems?
Exactly.
And then you can kind of spark the rest of the conversation based on what they're telling you, right? And you can kind of keep saying, then what happens and what happens next?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just amazing how it transforms the conversation. And then that leader or that person who wants the team to improve, rather than coming in and just saying, when is it going to be done? And can you do it faster? What do you need to do it faster?
Right.
And kind of putting them on the spot, you know, and making them feel kind of locked down, and they're not getting to kind of really open up and find their own motivations and desires. So can seem subtle maybe, but and in some ways it's not, but it's just so important in the workplace that we're in this day and age of complex knowledge work. So I'm glad you were touching on those things. That's really cool.
Sure.
I wonder, I know you have a background in Toastmasters, and I'm kind of curious, like, how would we tie that into some of these concepts we've been talking about, where you've benefited from Toastmasters and you've found it to improve how you come in and support teams and help people?
So I feel like I've always been really good at writing, you know, kind of written communications and different things like that. I think what I wanted with Toastmasters is, one, to be able to respond to questions like in interviews that maybe you didn't, you know, you didn't think you were going to do. Like, if you were an inanimate object, what kind would you be? I'm like, how is that related to agile coaching? But it teaches you to take a pause. And at the end of the Toastmasters, they have this thing, they're called table topics. And really, it's just random questions. And your goal is to talk for 1 to 2 minutes on this topic and act like it was the greatest thing you've ever heard. One of the things, and when I used to do it, I was really mean. It was like, if what cartoon character would you kill and how would you do it? Okay, well, nobody's prepared for that, but it was really interesting, that kind of improvisational stuff.
Yeah.
And two, it helps you structure your thoughts based on your goal. There is to be a competent communicator. Literally, that's what it's called,
okay.
A CC. And it's a book of 10 speeches. You get evaluated every time, but it's a very, as we like to say, a safe environment, psychologically safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
You get an evaluator. You get somebody who counts the number of ums, ahs, oh, filler words, all that stuff. So it's very tight feedback. And I always say, you know, it costs less than 3 figures. Like, it usually costs less than $100 because they have to,
wow,
you know, give you the books. Yeah, and most corporations, like big corporations, have at least 1 or 2 Toastmasters things, and most cities do.
Yeah.
But you can go to contests, you can focus like, hey, I just want to work on humorous speeches, or I just want to work on instructional speeches. And there's been some amazing stories. So if you can't get your story out, you can't convince anybody of anything. So I feel like I've gotten better in that regard. Like this, what we're doing right now, I don't think I'd be able to do it without Toastmasters. And some of the speaking, you know, when you get in front of a group of people, there's no way. There's different tricks, but most of it's just practice. They put you in the arena with a lion and you're just like, fight it. Okay, I'm going to fight it then. Or they try to throw you off. And if you get through it, then you've got that many more skills in your bag.
Yeah,
because
you build a little
bit
of confidence and
and
you're getting that feedback. That's cool. And you talked about stories earlier and the importance of us being able to convey a message or a story. And that reminded me, I'm working my way through Stephen Denning's book on storytelling. Yeah, The Leader's Guide to Storytelling. And
oh, that's great.
This is resonating with me, and you've got me interested in checking out the Toastmasters program because editing these podcasts, I catch myself with a lot of ums that I have to edit out and spare people from hearing too much of that. That's cool. So Toastmasters, yeah, good program for people to check out if they haven't already. It sounds like that was something that came alongside for you in your journey and really brought you to a whole new level of better communication.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think I had some hidden skills, but it really hones your skills as you're, you know, as I call it, in the arena, and you're like, you need to put a speech together. It needs to be 5 to 7 minutes. There's going to be somebody over your shoulder counting the number of ums, ahs, and there's going to be another person that's going to say, you know, did you use the right dictionary words, or did you hit all the different points of the speech? And that's your evaluator. And it's, but it is a friendly environment. And 9 times out of 10, the ones that I've been part of, they'll let you show up as many times as you want as a guest before you sign up. And again, signing up is not, you're not signing your life away. It's like, I don't know, $80 to $100 because Nationals needs to pay for the website. and different things like that. And you mentioned real quickly the word resonate. Mm-hmm. And that's actually another book that I would, I think it's free, but it's by Carol Dwart. And it's just basically how to take your PowerPoint slides, which probably suck. No offense. Everybody's do, you know, you're not, you know, did you ever hear the joke? Like how did they do the death by PowerPoint?
No, how?
Bullets.
Yeah. Oh, that is a good, that's a dad joke I can use later. Thank you.
Yeah. I've earned my dad jokes is what I've said.
That's great. Bullets. Yes. I love it. In fact, you know, it's funny because in that book by Stephen Denning, he even talked about the whole death by PowerPoint thing. And he said, you know, PowerPoint isn't the problem. That's just a tool. The problem is the people who are abusing and misusing the tool. So, but yeah, great joke on that. But okay, so it was resonance by...
I think it's resonate.
Oh, resonate. Okay.
Yeah. That it's always been like, hey, can you inspire people? Well, here's ways to do it. And it's really building a story around things, you know, just showing people the data. And one of the ideas they have is, you know, give it a character. Hey, this is Bob. You know, he's having two... many stories, you know, what are we going to do for Bob? And then you've kind of drawn people in because people love stories. And there's several different things like that. It's not about, oh my God, fitting, you know, as many bullets as you can on a smaller slide, getting the font smaller and smaller until you need the world's best glasses to look for it. It's like, here's your story. You probably need fewer slides.
Yeah.
And I believe it's a free download.
Cool. I'll look for that and add it in the show notes for people to find it. I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, you're right. It's about, again, back to beautiful scenery and other things. If your words, and hopefully few words, but a great maybe scene or picture or supporting image on your PowerPoint slide can really portray the whole message that you're trying to get across. That's really powerful. The visualization concept that, that enhances your story that you're trying to tell, and you're trying to engage people's that sort of inner voice that all of us have. Instead of them checking out and letting that inner voice distract them, you're trying to tease them with enough of the conflict or something in the story to kind of make them kind of invested in going on the journey with you as you're telling your story.
Bingo.
They're trying to solve it before you've told them what really happened at the end. So that's some of the brilliance of that Stephen Denning book too. And I know you've helped people, setting them up for success in different kind of mentoring programs and things like that. And I know productivity or sort of time management has been a topic of interest for you. Tell us a little bit more about your interest there, and what are you finding that's helping you, and what have you even been doing to help, you know, teams or other Scrum Masters coaches that you've been working with, you know, managing time and then teams, right? We tend to always overload ourselves, or the system that the team is in and the enterprise will make the team try to do way too much all at once. It's such a strong temptation. So, you know, talk on that a little bit.
So one of the things in time management, and, you know, I think one of the big things is you can't do everything. There's actually a book called Time Management for Mortals. It's called 4,000 Weeks. And while it's a little bit morbid, it's kind of like how long we get on this earth. He did the calculation. And what it does is it takes, and it basically just roasts productivity junkies like myself, you know, who are always trying to get more things done, in the fact that they might actually get everything done and they're going to be having a sense of peace after they go. I mean, I've kind of been through all the different programs. And so a couple of years ago, before the pandemic, when I used to leave the house, I said, you know, I see a lot of overlap between this and Agile. So I did a presentation at Agile Midwest on, hey, here's productivity. I forgot exactly what I call it. I think time management for the overwhelmed Agilist. And it was really interesting because you can take everything that we tell our teams, like start small. So we talked about, you know, different habit changes they can do. Like if you don't write things down and I tell you, you know, hey, use this really complicated planner system, is that going to work for you? Or should I get into, you know, how you do things or what you actually do well right now and what you can improve on? If you look at that, that's kind of like a retrospective. So sometimes, you know, my brain just explodes sometimes where I can't get rid of Agile, even if I'm off work. I say, you know, I logged out. Leave me alone with this Agile stuff. I'm just going to go watch TV. Well, you know, I was watching Ted Lasso because I'm like, hey, I'm just going to watch something about an American, you know, who goes over to England and coaches soccer. And I'm like, son of a gun, he's an agile coach. There was one section in the show where two people were having a disagreement. And as the coach manager of the team, they said, aren't you going to get involved? And he's like, nope. Where they're going to learn to manage themselves. So
that's right.
Well, God bless it if they weren't storming and, you know, he could get to norming and performing. So it's just really hard to get away from it. And I think that's actually kind of a good thing because it's infected a lot of different non-IT things in a good way. It's like, it's agile is everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and you know, for sure in our workplace, but it's in other workplaces that people are making more of a distinction in the words of the agile mindset being very important, and that there's this way of being, there's this sort of sense in which we really have to embrace some new language, maybe adjust how we look at things through different kinds of lenses, and not always just go straight to the doing of certain kind of practices and certain kind of behaviors, but sometimes for those behaviors or practices to really bear the results and the outcomes that people really want, you do have to kind of get immersed in a certain, you know, kind of way of thinking and a way of being. And that takes time, and everybody moves through that at their own pace. And and it takes those coaches around them, those supportive people like in the Ted Lasso program who have enough wisdom to realize that, no, people have to kind of go through some struggles and some storming and then be challenged to get them to a new way of thinking, to say, hang on a minute, maybe I should approach this differently by really trying to communicate better with this other person and understand them instead of just being in a conflict with them. So it's absolutely everywhere, no doubt about it. And so, which is why I found that even adjusting ourselves away from productivity, and I picked it up from, I think, Jonathan Smart and some co-authors, where they have a book out called Sooner, Safer, Happier. It's about value. And understanding how to talk about value in terms of desired outcomes. And so instead of productivity, which kind of implies more, 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 get more and more and more cranked out and out into the world, which is almost more like outputs. If we're thinking outcomes, it's about just one really powerful, valuable outcome that we all achieve together could change the world, could, you know, monetarily could be that multi-billion-dollar innovation that the company wants. But a lot of companies aren't getting that innovation because they've got people, you know, for the sake of quote unquote productivity, they're doing too many small little output oriented things that really are just like running in a hamster wheel. And those poor teams can't slow down enough to be innovative like the leaders and executives would rather have. And so it's a bit of a catch-22, and it's no one's fault per se, but it is going to require the Ted Lassos of the enterprise community to come in and in our own funny, awkward, unique way, challenge people a little bit and disrupt things like he disrupts that whole British community with his quirky Kansas City style about him. So I love it. Glad you brought that up. That's a fun one. Well, Andy, thanks for hanging out with me a little bit today and being a guest on the show. It's fun. We don't always get to interact on a day-to-day basis at work. I'm glad that we could hang out a bit longer and reflect on these things together. It's good to get to know you. So you and I are kind of just, you know, coming closer together on our journey for a little while right now. So I'm looking forward to what we're going to do in the coming days. So perhaps we'll have you back on the show. Maybe we'll even do a panel style episode with you and some other folks and
That'd be fun.
Expand on some of these concepts we've talked about today and maybe offer some things to people out there in other workplaces that they might want to experiment with. So any final thoughts, final words you'd like to share before we close the episode?
So I had a metaphor that I wanted to share with you one more.
I love it.
If you get, I don't know if you can hear in the background.
You've got your assistant there, a four-legged friend, it sounds like.
Exactly. So one of the things I wanted to share is like, if you're like a big fan, like, you know, I'm in St. Louis, so we're a Cardinals fan. As Agiles, we're kind of fans of everything Agile. And, you know, we want to talk about it all the time. We want to give statistics. We want to talk to everybody about it. But you really do have to pick and choose your battles, because these developers, they may not want to hear about every Cardinals, you know, World Series victory since like 1930, just like they don't want to hear every agile thing that you've ever talked about. So just kind of finding what works for them is it's a journey. Mm-hmm. And the easy way to do that, I'm going to say easy, it's simple, but it's not easy, is asking questions, you know, asking them about their journey, kind of what we're doing here, where there's fewer distractions. So I try to get one-on-one with folks as much as I can. So besides all the fictional characters that have helped me along my journey, Ted Lasso and the videos and the people I've actually met and mentors, I think, man, if you want to learn more about Agile or just coaching and applying it to your life, the resources are out there. Just every time you choose something, you're choosing not to do something else. And that's okay. You know, as long as you're kind of making that choice with full clarity.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. That's what so many people, myself included, are struggling with day in and day out, is making decisions. Because like you just highlighted, that when you decide to say yes to something, you're saying no, or at least not right now, to some other thing. And that's okay. But so many of us have a hard time letting go of that thing that we have to say no to for a little while. Brilliant insights. Thank you for the metaphor there about, you know, remembering to just meet people where they are, focus on them and not the words that we want to say, but just letting them talk, just ask a few questions and just sit back and take it all in. And many times it's fun to watch people kind of come to their own decision-making and conclusions with very little prompting needed from us. So we create that container, if you will, that little time and space that just allows them to do that, that they wouldn't have otherwise given it to themselves if we maybe didn't provide that for them. So that's the brilliance of inviting a coach in into your world as a team or as a individual. So thanks again, Andy, for highlighting that. Really grateful for you and your friendship here in the workplace and all the great work that you're continuing to do. So thanks for being a guest on the QuakaCast here with me. And I look forward to seeing more of what you're going to do here in the near future. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jeff.
Take care.
Thanks for spending time with us today. Please take a few moments to rate and review this podcast. If you would like to appear as a guest, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, it would be my privilege to quack about it with you. Send me an email at jeff@agilequaka.com. To learn more about our guests and any items we referenced within the podcast, visit the episode notes. To discover more about me, the Agile Quaka, check out my website at agilequaka.com. Until next time.